Baby watch is over. No more baby watch here at Catholic Answers. Oh, well, we got one more baby to wait for. Sorry, Nick. I apologize. But immediate baby watch, that baby has come, came on Saturday morning about 9 o'clock here. As you know, we've been waiting for our producer, Darren, and his wife, Rena, to have their third child. Apparently, Rena did all the work. But it's weird because assistant producer Marie, one of her relatives, delivered the baby. So I guess it's a small world here in Southern California. But congratulations to Rena and Darren and Joe and Catherine because they have a new member of the family. Go ahead, Nick. You want to say it? Baby Zoe. And now, how long do we have to wait for you to have another baby, Nick?
Till June.
June. Okay.
Baby Dominic's due in June.
All right. So we're on low intensity baby watch now, but we got on high intensity baby watch for a while. So congratulations to all of them. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live. And Darren left us very well scheduled before he left. So we have a wonderful couple hours for you today. On the second hour, we're going to talk about faith and works with former evangelical theologian Douglas Beaumont. You all know Doug Beaumont, and so he'll be here to talk about how we think as Catholics about faith and works. And if you're a Catholic, you're welcome to call and talk about that with him, or non-Catholics are welcome too. This hour, we talk about miracles, Eucharistic miracles in particular. And usually our guest for this hour, we talk about science, and then people ask about miracles and stuff. Today, we start with the miracles. Our guest this hour is Dr. Stacy Trosenkos. Dr. Trosenkos has a PhD from Penn State University in what's that called? Chemistry. Oh, yeah. And a master's in dogmatic theology from Holy Apostles College. She's the author of Science Was Born of Christianity, the teaching of Father Stanley Yockey, and the very popular Particles of Faith, a Catholic guide to navigating science. She's now also the executive director and chief high muckety-muck of the St. Philip Institute of Catechesis and Evangelization. Hello, Dr. Trosenkos. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Cy. It's great to be back on the show again.
So that's a new title for you. Can you just tell us something about what do you do there? I mean, not you as the executive director, but what does the Institute do, St. Philip Institute of Catechesis and Evangelization?
Well, Bishop Strickland wrote a constitution on teaching where he said we need to simply teach the faith. And so instead of just having different departments within the chancery, he started an entire institute that is charged with that mission to teach the Catholic faith to the people of East Texas. He wants us to teach the faith in general, but he insists that we focus on the people of East Texas. In other words, take the shining truths off the hill and bring them down in a communicable way to the people who live here in East Texas. So he started the Institute with this constitution. And my job as executive director with the other directors is to do what he tells us to do, to teach on the liturgy, the virtues, catechesis, make materials for parents who are raising children. We're communicating specifically to seven different seasons of life so that we are teaching the faith. That's what it's all about. And everything we do goes through that mission statement.
That is exciting. That's exciting work.
It's characteristically simple and elegant, the way Bishop Strickland does everything. I mean, he doesn't want us to complicate anything, just teach it. It's like a breath of fresh air to be doing something like this, because I guess, you know, I had come to the conclusion a long time ago as a Catholic that the most important thing you can do any day of your life is to get yourself to heaven and lead other people to heaven, too. Like, that matters more than anything. And it's fun and great and exciting to have a job where that is what I'm supposed to be doing. And we have the staff here. They're all young, orthodox, enthusiastic, talented people. So
Sounds like Catholic Answers.
I'm loving it.
Although we're not all young here. We're not all young. The hardworking ones are. 888-318-7884 is our number here if you'd like to talk with Dr. Trosenkos about Eucharistic miracles. 888-318-7884. Anyone welcome to pick up the phone and dial that number. I don't want to make too many delays here, but Particles of Faith, your book, your kind of guide for Catholics, is, for who, how do we navigate this new world of science that we're living in? And it seems like it's a newer all the time. Well, I guess it is. Everything is. But I mean, it's an ever expanding new world of science. How do we navigate that as Catholics? Something's happening with that book.
Yes, I'm so excited. When I wrote the book, I wrote it with young people in mind. But now it's been rewritten. So I've rewritten it specifically in language appropriate for teenagers. I've explained a little more of the science, more of the theology, but it's been rewritten into a student edition. So Particles of Faith, student edition. It's a textbook that Catholic high school religion and science teachers can use to either do a 4, an 8, or a 16-week course to teach their students how to navigate the scientific issues. And what's unique about it, as you know from the book, is it has a lot of science in it. So it has the science that the students are going to be learning in biology, chemistry, and physics classes. And it even points beyond that to what they might learn if they study science in college or become scientists. And the fundamental line for the whole book is that science is the study of the handiwork of God. And so once students get through with this course, they will never be confused by that false narrative that's so rampant in our society today that faith and science are in conflict. It's totally, I don't want to just refute that conflict myth. I want them to get past it and to actually lead scientific progress because they know how to practice virtue and live the Christian life. They understand what it's all about. So they're Catholics are the ones who should be leading scientific progress.
Again. Do you know what I mean by that? Leading scientific progress?
Yeah, again.
Yes.
Yeah. Science was, yes, exactly.
Because it all started in the Catholic Church. But you probably know that having written a book entitled that Science is Born of Christianity. Or I paraphrased the title, but.
No, that's the title.
Did I say it right?
Based on Father Yaki's teaching. Yeah, and I look at it like this, like, okay, I have to tell you, next year I'm going to have 4 teenage girls in the house because four of my daughters will all be teenagers at the same time in 2020. But I sort of look at science as this adolescent who science was born of Christianity, and then science grew up really fast and became independent. And we're at a point in time now where science needs to come back in a more mature way to its mother and seek her guidance. So I like the future of science. I see it not totally being what it was in the medieval times, but a more mature science with all we know about the quantum and the atomic realm and materials chemistry, something that is reintegrated with philosophy and theology and directed in a way that science actually benefits humanity.
Man, Richard Dawkins is not going to like this. He is not going to like that is a magnificent vision. And of course, it's in a very basic way, it has to happen because you can't even continue a very reasonable pursuit based only on reason. A human being is much more than that and eventually will break down and do horrible things like maybe blow up the world if we don't behave not just as reasoning but also as moral and spiritual creatures. But okay, so here you are, this big-time scientist. Now you've got the fancy title. And why are we here today to talk about Eucharistic miracles? You're not embarrassed of this idea of miracles?
No, not at all. Actually, so I'm fine with miracles. The way Father Stanley Yaki put it that I love the best is if God created everything, if God created at the atomic level even all the electrons whizzing around in their atoms in their quantum mechanically defined orbitals doing their thing so precisely. I mean, if God can create all of that and hold it all in existence right now, then of course God can choose to work miracles. And of course it makes sense that God would suspend the laws of nature for the benefit of our salvation, because that's why we believe God works miracles. He does it not on a whim, but he does it when there is a cause to benefit the salvation of someone, of a person or groups of people. And so that's the most logical conclusion in the world, is that if God can hold everything in existence created with order like it is, he certainly could go beyond that order and work miracles. So intellectually, miracles are reasonable. What I sort of got stumped on, I mean, I'm embarrassed to admit it, but I'll just be honest. When it was sort of like an abstract idea, it was like, okay, but I was sort of afraid to look into the scientific research around the Eucharistic miracles. Not so much that I don't think miracles could happen, but so much because I'm not really sure who I can believe. Like, what if people were not doing the scientific analysis thoroughly? What if they were biased in their conclusions? I almost didn't want to know.
Mm-hmm.
But the bishop asked us to look at a video of a miracle in Buenos Aires that a local cardiovascular surgeon here, who's Catholic and very good friends with the bishop, sent him because his daughter sent it to him. And they were very excited about it. And so I looked at this miracle, the Eucharistic miracles in Argentina, and I started looking into it. And I thought, you know what? Maybe I should give a talk or something on this. And I put together a talk, and I looked more into the data and more into the data, and I still had that feeling that I'm going to be up there giving this talk, and I'm just going to say that I'm reading what's in a book here.
Yeah.
But I had this uneasiness because I thought, I really still would like to see. I don't want somebody to say, this is what the analysis said. I want to see the results for myself. I want to be the scientist going, I think you could interpret it another way. Maybe it doesn't really say what you're thinking. You know, like, let there be a debate. And I didn't have the scientific reports. Bishop Strickland emails me from Australia, where he was visiting January 22nd. And he says, guess what, Stacey? I met a man named Ron Tesoriero outside of a small church in Sydney while I was visiting here. He says he was the man who was sent to Buenos Aires to investigate the miracle, to record all the scientists doing their investigation. He has all these materials, including the scientific analysis right here in this book. I'm going to mail them to you. And so they were just sitting on my desk, all because I'm like, God, I'd really like to see
the
data. Analysis. Boom. It comes to me from Australia.
Isn't that just like him, Stacey? I love the fact that it took kind of a miracle. Like, why is your bishop in Australia, and why does he run into a guy who did the original studies on this? Right at the moment where you're asking yourself, is this really science? Can I trust this? So you needed a miracle to be convinced of a miracle, basically, is what happened.
Yeah. It's sort of like one of those times you're like, okay, God, I get it. I will look at the data.
Well, fair enough. We have lots of folks on the line, and I also want you to tell us a bit about, okay, so what is that Eucharistic miracle in Buenos Aires, and what are the maybe some of the other Eucharistic miracles? We'll get to all of that when we come back. Our store-wide spring sale is underway right now. We've got new resources from, the wonderful new book from Don Eden, Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn. Promo code SPRING19 at checkout. Save 15% off store-wide right now at shop.catholic.com.
Your questions, Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is proudly supported by CatholicChemistry.com, a new dating site for Catholics who want to do dating right and believe relationships start with Catholic chemistry. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicChemistry.com for their generous support. On the web at CatholicChemistry.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
EWTN, teaching the truth.
I had called in last spring about talking to my parents and I was going to convert to the church and how to talk to them. They were not happy at all, but I was confirmed to the church at the Easter Vigil service, and we really don't talk about the topic, but our relationship is still intact, so that's a good thing. Just wanted to say thank you, and I still listen every day because I always learn something new.
EWTN, live truth, live Catholic.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. A lot to be happy about around here. We love when the new babies come, and we've got lots of young people here. So we do end up getting good news about babies every now and then here at Catholic Answers, and that's always good. But I'm also, I will just confess, This is my favorite work day of the year, the first day of daylight savings time. I love driving home and it's still sunny out. Is that totally self-centered? I don't know, but I just love it. So I'm in a great mood. Plus, Dr. Stacy Trisankos is here, who by some freak I have not gotten to speak to for a long time. And I think that the freakish thing that happened is I probably blew it at several points. So I'm glad to have you back. We're talking about Eucharistic miracles today. Dr. Trisankos is a PhD chemist who once explained to an entire room full of Catholics how photosynthesis works, and I don't think any of us understood it, but it was awfully impressive to see what God was doing in every single leaf on the planet Earth. So you talked about how there's this Eucharistic miracle in Buenos Aires. Your bishop was kind of prompting you to share this with people as an aid to faith, which is what it's supposed to be. You were a little reluctant, given you didn't know the data on this thing. Okay, so God works his somewhat generally charming, miraculous ways, gets you that data. So now you believe in Eucharistic miracles, big time scientist. So tell us what happened there in Buenos Aires.
Right. So in Buenos Aires, this was a miracle that happened 1992, 1994, and 1996. And just so you can see, I'm reading from this book, Eucharistic Miracles of the World. It's the best book I've found on them because it has a lot of details in it. But on three separate occasions, there were consecrated hosts found that were oozing blood. And so there was a fairly good amount of sample then. And so when each one of them was found on the floor, they were picked up, and the standard procedure is to put them in water and then store them in the tabernacle so that they will dissolve. And the miracle happened when someone went back a few days later and looked at these samples in the water in the tabernacle, and they were bloody. They were oozing blood. They had turned red. And so they took them out of the water, stored them on a cloth. And then years later, even up until the year 2000, so these happened in 92, 94, 96, even up until the year 2000, I'm not quite sure why they waited so long to send them for analysis, but they did. There's a report of a chemist in the congregation or a parishioner who did look at the leukocyte formula. Basically, she was able to run a test on the samples right away and confirmed that they are human blood, or they at least her analysis was consistent with what human blood would be. But then the man who wrote this book, Ron Tesoriero in Australia, he's a journalist and a lawyer. He was asked by who is now Pope Francis, back when he was an archbishop, he was asked to document the investigation. So they sent these samples to New York, to other laboratories in Argentina. They sent them around to be analyzed, and they did, you know, in science, this is something that is the hallmark of a good conclusion. When you do a number of different analyses independently, and they all point to the same conclusion. And these samples, just like the samples from, remember Lanciano, where yes, 12 centuries later they analyzed them, just like the samples from Tixla, Mexico in 2006, later on in 2006 were determined. All the Eucharistic miracles show human DNA, fresh samples, meaning the blood and the tissue still have white blood cells in them. Now, the experts will say that, and they just see this by looking at a microscope, there shouldn't be white blood cells. If the experts who didn't know what the samples were looked at it and said, this looks like tissue that just came from somebody who died from trauma a few hours ago. So it's living. It's living, and it has the white blood cells, which is indicative of trauma to the heart. And the samples were also found to be myocardium, and near, the experts say, near the central, the part of the heart that pumps blood and gives life to the whole body.
So, and all the labs came up with the same conclusions.
The one, so progress, yes, progressively over time. So back in the 1300s, 1400s, they couldn't do tests like they can do now. But all the tests in the last four or five miracles since the 1990s, when they do the test in different places, different people, they get the same results. They also all have type AB blood, which is characteristic of a person from the Middle East. So it's pretty interesting how they all do. That's why I wanted to see the lab reports. They all do. I mean, you could say, well, just because this sample tested consistent with the way it would look if it were human doesn't mean that it is human. Okay, you might could say that. But when that happens over and over and over again, it's always consistent with human blood from the heart, heart tissue, actually, heart tissue that's undergone trauma, that's still living, which I think is the really neat part, and that it tests positive for human DNA. There's one more baffling part that I have seen the data for, and there's really not any better way to analyze it, is that when they try to do a DNA analysis the old way, I'll get to that in a minute later on, but when they try to do the DNA analysis the old way, there's no human profile. And I looked that up. The DNA analysis done the old way looks at certain segments. So most of the DNA is the same, but it looks at certain segments that are unique to being human. But those segments are made up from mother and father DNA specifically. And it's really odd that those don't show up. So in those standard tests, they're not seeing the segments of DNA that are representative of a human having a mother and a father. And so some theologians have speculated, well, because Christ wouldn't have DNA from a human father. So that's sort of where it is now. And those are the tests I wanted to see. And they just simply are inconclusive.
I see. Okay. So now, just so that we know, like you hear about miracles all the time in various settings. Of course, there's always the joke one, you know, like the Blessed Virgin Mary appearing in a piece of toast or something like that. And so that becomes a kind of source of derision for some people to point these things out. So what does the church actually say about these miracles? I mean, is it saying, yeah, okay, most things are not miracles, but these definitely are, or these could be, or what's the... What are we looking at as far as the church's kind of expression about these? Are we encouraged, for example, to think this is a miracle?
We're left to make our own decision, but the miracles in this book and the miracles we were specifically focusing on here were approved. And what it means for a Eucharistic miracle to be approved is that, you know, something happens, you take it to the bishop or the archbishop, and that bishop initiates an investigation, and then the results of the investigation are presented to the bishop, and the bishop declares it authentic or not. So at that level, the bishops say that, yes, we've had a real investigation done. It's been done rigorously. It looks like it's a miracle. And so you're free to believe that it's a miracle. But it doesn't go so far as to impose it on people as that you I have see. To believe it.
All right. Fair enough. Ton of callers. Shall we go to the phones?
Sure.
All right. Nate, in Dallas, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Nate, your question for Dr. Stacy Trisankos.
Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon. So I know that the Catholic Church is very, very meticulous and does its due diligence whenever a new miracle is brought forward, and they look into it, make sure that it's not fraudulent, and they also have offered the shroud several times for rigorous scientific examination, and DNA testing has been around for 30 years. I was wondering if they've compared the DNA of older samples as well as newer samples and against each other to see if they are the exact same DNA matches and to tell us anything about his traits, you know, his physical features.
Okay. Yeah. Dr. Trisankos.
Yeah, that is a great question. And it And I had, Nate, I had a similar thought. I had the thought so strongly, I thought, I wonder if I can write a proposal for a grant and get funding to conduct these studies, because they haven't been done, Nate, that I know of, and I think I've looked at everything. They have not been done. Now, the man in Australia, Ron Tesoriero, who sent the bishop these books for me to look at, he has asked that the mitochondrial DNA of these samples be compared for the same reason you're saying, because the mitochondrial DNA would have the DNA from the mother. There are people who have samples of Mary's hair, they say, and that would be something to compare it to. But no, I think those sequences should be done.
We can get a little more on what mitochondrial DNA is when we come back. But Nate, thank you for the question. More on Eucharistic miracles with Dr. Stacey Drisenkos right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Author Mark McNeil spent years in the Oneness Pentecostal movement, praying in its lively services, zealously spreading its unconventional teachings, and rejecting mainstream Christianity as misguided. Then he left it all behind. All in the Name is the story of a man who believed he was among an elite group of believers who followed the true faith when so many others had strayed. But an inquisitive mind, careful study, and the action of the Holy Spirit finally led Mark out of Oneness Pentecostalism and into the Catholic Church. This is an inspiring conversion story you won't want to miss. It's a faith strengthener for Catholics and an intriguing challenge to those who deny the doctrine of the Trinity. Order your copy of All in the Name today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Is the Church wrong on contraception? In a culture that worships the pursuit of sexual pleasure, the Catholic Church's teaching on contraception can seem archaic and unintelligible. Its critics say it's outdated, theologically unfounded, and even harmful. And even faithful Catholics can have difficulty explaining this moral teaching. Catholic Answers is out to change all of that. That's why we've just released Trent Horn's dynamic new DVD, The Case Against Contraception. Using scripture, papal and magisterial teachings, natural law, and new insights provided by social science and medicine, Trent puts forward a compelling case for Catholic teachings with his trademark charity and persuasive graciousness. Be prepared to give a defense. Order your copy of The Case Against Contraception today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hurt someone else's character?
We're discussing the sin of detraction on tomorrow's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie.
Now let's get back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Dr. Stacey Drisenkos, theologian and chemist, is our guest this hour. She's also the executive director of the St. Philip Institute of Catechesis and Evangelization down in what's the diocese name in Texas? What's your diocese?
Diocese of Tyler.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it, and then I got scared that I was off. All right. So Nate was asking if they've ever compared the DNA from the various Eucharistic miracles. You're saying no, that that's something that needs to be done, and you're possibly going to profit by getting a grant to do that. I thought that was interesting that you admitted you profit from it. But you were mentioning mitochondrial DNA. So you could conceivably, if you could extract mitochondrial DNA, you could compare to see if these had the same mother.
Yes, ideally you could match the DNA. So if you had, say, a strand of hair from the Blessed Virgin, and there are places that say they do have that, you could do the mitochondrial DNA of the hair and compare it to what you would find in these samples. And if it matched up, and if you could show that these tissues are actually living, like I was talking about before,
yeah,
then you could actually show that Christ was resurrected with science. And, you know, I'm real careful about saying that because I don't want anybody to think that we need science to prove that. But if you could look at the mother's DNA and if it was the same in all these samples that are from fresh, miraculous tissues today, well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting whether it'll ever be done or not. I don't know because I'm not sure what all would have to be involved to actually do that.
Yeah. And there'd still be people who wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
You'd still have a need for faith in order to believe. Let's go to Tracy in Fisherville, Kentucky, listening to EWTN Sirius XM satellite radio channel 130. Tracy, your question for Stacy.
Hi, Stacy. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. It's kind of interesting because the question that I had, you almost answered all of it already in your description of the book and your inquisitive mind trying to figure things out. My husband and I actually were just in Italy. We did a holy tour, and we saw the Lanciano miracle, which it's pretty unbelievable, but it is fascinating what they studied and how they studied it because it was supposedly occurred between 7:30 and 7:50.
Yeah.
But they also have the wine that turned to blood and was coagulated in a vessel that you could see in this reliquary. Do you know, since you answered my other question, if the blood that was studied in that, with the species being, you know, wine turned into blood, if they showed the similar type of trauma and blood type? I don't remember that when we went to see that when we were there.
No.
Okay.
Right. No, and what I found in these books I've read, they did not see that there was white blood cells in those samples. But they did do some sort of protein analysis that shows that it had the samples from Lanciano have the same, they give the same signal as fresh blood would. So they saw a similarity to fresh, but they did not see the white blood cells.
Tracy?
So that's different.
So that was even within the host as well that turned to flesh, they did not see the white blood cells?
Yeah, I didn't see anything from Lanciano. Yeah, from the Lanciano reports, and there was one man, Dr. Linoli, I believe, who published his full analysis in an Italian scientific journal. I didn't see anything about the white blood cells being visible under the microscope in those samples. But in the other ones, in Tixla, in Buenos Aires, and in Poland in 2008, they did see the white blood cells.
I would venture to guess that part of the reason that is because it's almost 1,400 years old.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the fact
exactly.
That, the fact that it still shows
mitochondrial.
Word? Mitochondria.
Yeah.
Yes.
Myocardium.
The myocardium. Yeah.
Yeah, for the heart.
Just in case anybody or people listening don't know, when we talk about the miracle of Lanciano, there was a priest in the 8th century in a church in Lanciano who was having personal doubts about whether the Eucharist really was the body and blood of Jesus. And following that kind of confession to himself that he was having these doubts, the Eucharist was transformed into actual heart muscle and blood. And it has remained, you would think, over all those centuries, almost 13 centuries now, it would have degraded, but it has not. It's still there, and you can go to Lanciano, Italy, and see it, and maybe you should. Did I get it about right?
Yes, and I was surprised. There's over 100 Eucharistic miracles explained in this book, and many of them are exposed or visible during certain times still today.
Yeah.
They're still intact.
Tracy, thanks very much for that call. We go now to Tom in Ohio, also listening on Sirius XM satellite radio channel 130. That's EWTN on Sirius satellite radio. Tom, your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
Yes, Doctor, you're obviously a scientist, and you know that the universe works under the laws of quantum mechanics. Have you ever seen a tangible miracle? That means it defies the laws of physics. It defies the laws of quantum mechanics. It is random. For example, has anybody grown a new leg or a new eye or a new arm that you've seen or heard about?
No, I have never seen one. But like I started in the beginning, intellectually, I don't have a problem with accepting that miracles could happen. I've never seen one. I've never seen anybody grow a third leg or, I mean, I saw my child grow a foot once, but that was over a year when she was getting older. But I've never seen anybody actually grow a third leg or another eye or something. And I know what you're saying. Like, how can you just believe they occur then? That was one reason I was kind of afraid to even look at the scientific reports on these, because it made me a little nervous. Like, what if, you know, like Cy was talking about the toast with the Virgin Mary's or Jesus in the toast. What if even the scientists are doing that just at a different level where they're sort of biased in how they analyze the results? This is why I wanted to see the results for myself so I could see what they were actually interpreting. But yeah, like I said before, if God holds everything in existence, why wouldn't he work miracles? Like, it would actually be illogical for him not to work miracles.
Do we still have you there, Tom?
Yes. And when you spoke about the living tissue, if you said that, or if it was said that there was no father, that would mean that there was no Y chromosome, and then the person would be a genotypic female.
Well, that's where you get into different ways to interpret the data. So if there's human DNA, but they can't get a typical human profile where they look at the contributions from a mother and father, that doesn't necessarily, it just says question mark. Like, what does this mean? We're not getting a typical human profile in the DNA the way they used to. Nate, the caller before, was talking about doing a DNA analysis. There are techniques now that can do a much more thorough DNA analysis of all the DNA, not just the segments that I was talking about before. And I think it would be interesting to see what those look like. But no, that wouldn't necessarily mean that that it's female.
Tom?
Balance the X.
Did I answer?
Was that answer satisfying, Tom, or no?
Well, that's the answer. Have to satisfy me. I thank you very much. It's been very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom.
Tom, I wanted to suggest something. I don't know if Tom is still there with us, but there's a little. There was. She's not a little girl anymore, but there was a little girl named Benedicta McCarthy who was healed of hepatic necrosis. That's a dead liver, basically, at Massachusetts General Hospital. And her doctor, Ronald Kleinman from Mass General Hospital, testified to the Vatican that I was willing to say it was miraculous. And I mentioned this one because when people are made saints, there are miracles that accompany those, and those can be investigated as well. And this was the miracle that was used to make Edith Stein, also known as Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, a saint in the Catholic Church. And the fact is, you have the doctor himself who was treating this girl willing to testify to the Vatican that this was miraculous, that a dying or dead liver was brought back to full health. And I often say to people, investigate these things. I don't even understand why in newspapers, for example, the New York Times will report an alleged miracle and not actually do an interview with the doctor and say, why did you testify to the Vatican that you saw a miracle? So I will just give you that name, Benedicta McCarthy. You can look that up. It's on the internet. She's still alive. You can ask her yourself if you want, whether or not that was a miraculous cure. Dr. Stacey Trusenkos is our guest this hour. We're talking Eucharistic miracles, however, a very special kind of miracle, and I think it's fair to say, Stacey, that those miracles are given to us by God so that we will have faith in a very difficult proposition, which is that Christ is bodily present, body, blood, soul, and divinity in the Eucharist.
Yes, it sure changed the way I think about things when I'm at Mass now. Like, I'm a convert, so for a long time I was very excited to be at Mass, like, you know, because you're in the presence of Christ. There's a miracle going on in transubstantiation that Christ is present. And receiving the body and blood of Christ, that was so emotionally overwhelming for me for a long time. But then after the years, I sort of just got into the routine of doing the things, kneeling. And, you know, sometimes I'd look at the consecrated host and wonder, when exactly does it become the body? But it sparked a new appreciation in me. Like, it made it more real, where I think my own faith had started to just sort of go flat.
Right. Because we're human. Without sensory input, it's very hard for us to maintain even something that we believe and hold precious. And God is good. He helps us in that way. Again, your calls are welcome. 888-31-TRUTH. Dr. Stacy Trusenkos is our guest. And she's down there in Texas, but Texas is a big state, so we figured that we can send even more theologians and philosophers and apologists down there. So on March 29th, and 30th, Tim Staples, Trent Horn, and Carlo Broussard will be part of the Fullness of Truth Conference at Prince of Peace Catholic Church in San Antonio, Texas. Fullness of Truth conferences are offered in various places. So they'll also be on May 10th and 11th. Tim, Trent, and Carlo will be at Good Shepherd Catholic Church in Colleyville, Texas. You will leave these conferences on fire for your faith. It's hard not to hear those three guys and not. Just visit fullnessoftruth.org for more information.
Hello, this is Bishop Jeffrey Monfort, and Bishop of the Diocese of Steubenville. Make sure you keep it on Catholic Answers Live. God bless you.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
The Eucharist is just what the Catholic Church says it is. It's the body and blood, soul and divinity of Jesus Christ. And sometimes the Lord reminds us of that by giving us Eucharistic miracles. And that is what we are talking about today. Eucharistic miracles with Dr. Stacy Trusenkos, author most notably of Particles of Faith, which is now in a student edition. So look for that for your student, Particles of Faith, the student edition, a great guide for how to navigate science as a Catholic in the modern world. Lots of questions for Dr. Trusenkos, so I'm going to just keep going through them. Jamie in St. Louis, Missouri, you are up next to your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I'll keep it brief. This is more of a comment, I guess, than a question. And I just want to say I so appreciate you coming on and talking about this Eucharistic miracle of Buenos Aires. And why? Because we've been using this the past 3 years. It was given to me as a gift by one of the parents, the video. And just like you, I'm laughing because I'm like, I don't want to know, like, you know, the real story behind this, man. I want to believe it's true. And just like you were, you know, I didn't want to delve into the deep depths of it, you know. So I just so appreciate you coming in to Catholic Answers and talking about this very specific Eucharistic miracle, because it has meant everything to me, and I can't express the jaws that drop from these young eighth graders. I do confirmation. I do the confirmation program, and we show this video before our Eucharistic Adoration event, and I can't express in words the look on these kids' eyes when they see this video. and understand the truth behind what's been taught for over 2,000 years.
Well, let's let Dr. Trusenko, Jamie, let's just get her a reaction to that so far.
Thank you so much. Thank you, because that gives us confidence to keep doing this. I totally agree. I mean, part of what gave me, I guess, the courage to look into this stuff when I was a little bit afraid to, my teenagers, I have 7 kids, and like I said, 4 of them will be girls, or are girls, and will be teenagers next year. So they're asking a lot of questions, and I don't want them to struggle, but I know that they're going to, you know, they're going to ask questions. They have free will. But my daughter was saying one day, like, I get that Jesus is there, and I get all the stuff that we've been talking about, and I know that he's really present in the Mass. And she's like, Mom, I have trouble, like drama with my friends, trouble trying to figure out what I'm going to do with my life, and all these heavy pressing issues for a teenager. She's like, I need Jesus to appear before me and sit right down right here with me right now and hold my hand and tell me what to do. Like, she just needed something like that. And I do think these miracles help young people, or anybody, just like you said, they help make it more tangible, because we're human, we have limits, and we need something tangible to help us understand that it is real.
Jamie, I'm going to leave it there. I hope that that was helpful to you, because I did say I want to get to as many callers as I can before we have to go. So we'll go now to Jenny in Minnesota, listening on Real Presence Radio. Jenny, your question for Dr. Stacy Trusenkos.
I was wondering if there have been any Eucharist miracles that new advanced technology has disproved.
Yes, that is a great question. There is, I don't remember where it occurred, but it occurred, I think, in the United States, in the Midwest somewhere, maybe Ohio. I can't remember exactly, but you can Google it. There have been situations where a consecrated host fell on the floor. Someone picked it up, put it in water, stored it in the tabernacle, all the procedures. And when they came back later, there was something red growing on it. Well, it turns out there is a form of a fungus, I think, or a bacteria, Serratia marcescens, I think is what it's called. But it looks red. It's like a bread mold. And it looks red, and it's a bright, deep red, like it looks like blood. And so there have been times when people thought that was a Eucharistic miracle, but that's a pretty easy one to analyze. Like, when you look at it under the microscope, it looks like a fungus. It has a lot of tentacles. It looks very different from heart tissue. It's easily identifiable under a microscope. And then any kind of elemental analysis would also say this is not heart tissue. So there have been some cases where people thought that's what it was. And you'll find a lot in the skeptics who say these aren't miracles. Oh, that's just that bread mold growing, and they think it's blood. No, it's pretty easy to tell that it's not bread mold, because you just need to look at it under a microscope. And then you can do all these other analyses that are typically run on blood or heart tissue to verify that there's DNA and proteins and things like that there.
Jenny, what do you make of that?
I think that is really cool, and that will help me grow in my faith a lot.
Well, praise God for that, Jenny. It's a great question, because it would be really odd if it was like every time that someone claims a miracle, the church was going, yep, there's another one. It's really important for believability, that this be a rare thing that the church gives its approval. All right, Jenny?
Awesome. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. On Facebook, Gwyneth asks the following, Dr. Trusenkos. Do you have a concern of sacrilege in testing the species from a Eucharistic miracle?
That's a great question. I never really thought about that. But now that you ask, Gwyneth, I guess that's why there has to be, so it would be sacrilege if someone took it upon themselves, on him or herself individually, to do a test. But I'm pretty sure this is the correct answer, that the reason you go to the bishop and say, we found this, then it's sanctioned. There's a committee that's formed, and there are people put in charge of the investigation. And so the investigation itself has been approved for certain purposes. That's a great question, because there's another part I noticed, that Some of the more recent miracles, once the investigation is complete, then a full report is presented at a conference in that diocese to communicate the findings of the report in a very, you know, in a very formal way. And I've noticed also sometimes there's time that passes between the discovery of the miracle and the completion of the investigation, like years, 3 years in one case. So I'm going to say that since you, if you follow those procedures, you go to the bishop orders an investigation, and everything is in line with that investigation, then it's not sacrilege.
Thank you very much, Gwyneth, for that question. Several people mentioning on YouTube Eucharistic miracles in Poland. What do you know about that? Have there been? Are you familiar with Eucharistic miracles in Poland? And also, are they? What was the word you used? Approved Eucharistic miracles.
Yes. Yeah, the ones in Poland are, and they're in this book. There's quite a bit on those Eucharistic miracles. It happened in 2008, so it wasn't that long ago. And the bishop there conducted, had the investigation started, and they had two experts at, what is it, the University of Bialystok. It's a university there in Poland. They had two medical doctors who were experts on the heart tissues conduct investigations, and they found all the things that I was saying before. They found that the tissues were living. That's how they described it. That they are consistent with having experienced trauma. Even in these samples in Poland, a skeptic accused them of committing murder because the skeptic saw the samples and said, "You got this from a person that was murdered just recently." But it wasn't. It came from, you know, there was a trail of witnesses that verified it came from the Eucharist. But it was living tissue. It had the white blood cells indicative of trauma, had the same type AB. I made some notes here on that. And they even tested to rule out chemically that it wasn't that that bread mold that I was talking about. But there was one more thing. They were accused in Poland of having swapped the samples. Okay, so somebody wants to say there's a Eucharistic miracle. Somebody swaps in a piece of tissue. That's why they accused him of murder. Somebody murdered somebody and swapped in a piece of heart tissue, and now they're calling it a miracle. They put it under an electron microscope, and what they saw, I can testify to this as a chemist who worked on building nanocomposites. Intertwined in the fibers of the heart tissue, the striated fibers, was also portions of the bread. And the scientists said it was as if the bread just became the heart tissue. And you cannot make that up. You can't affect that. You can't imitate that chemically, because you would have to get molecules to form bread and then intertwine with the heart, form bread. I mean, you just can't artificially simulate that in a laboratory. And so that was also a very compelling piece of information. And that's something you can see under a microscope that's strong enough.
Thank you, YouTube, for those questions. I don't have a name on that because there was various people asking that. It strikes me that these are needed miracles, because there is this sense out there that I know you have fought for years that science is somehow superseding everything else, and we don't that there isn't. I mean, come on, miracles, a kind of dismissal of every other part of life, and to be reminded that God hasn't given up just because, you know, people fly in airplanes is very important.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can scientifically investigate miracles in the sense that you can. I mean, something in science needs to be repeatable, and we've seen this same kind of data repeated so many times now. It does. Science in this case, I have to say, I would have been hesitant to before. It does lend credence to these miracles. I don't know what any other explanation would be.
Dr. Chesenkos, thanks for a great hour. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It was kind of fun to come at it from the miracle side instead of the science side with you.
Yeah.
For once. Science was born of Christianity. The teaching of Father Stanley Yaki is one of Dr. Trusenko's books. The most famous one, though, I think I'm reasonable in saying, Particles of Faith, A Catholic Guide to Navigating Science. Now coming out in a student edition. Look for it. You can also find her at the St. Philip Institute for Catechesis and Evangelization. Coming up next, Doug Beaumont, former evangelical theology professor. We're going to talk about faith and works.